Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are talking with Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie & Associates in New York City. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Happy to be with you today.
Let's see. As you know, we certainly have the Dale Carnegie franchise here in Maine, and I've got to meet you, and we've had an opportunity to talk about Dale Carnegie over the last, 6 months. Hard to believe it's been about that time frame.
Time flies, doesn't it?
It sure does. But you recently came in as president of Dale Carnegie, and you know, for the audience out there who doesn't know you, why don't you give a little bit of the history, you know, where you came from, a little bit who you are at, and what brought you to Dale Carnegie?
Sure. Well, I started full-time as the CEO of Dale Carnegie in August. I actually am from the Michigan area, lifelong Michigander. My wife and my kids and I moved to New York when I took this position. I don't normally admit this to a polite audience, but I'm a lawyer by background. And I started my career as a lawyer in Detroit working for a large firm. And ultimately, I took a Dale Carnegie course in 1995, and that course really just changed the trajectory of my life for me. It kind of opened up my vision for the different things that I thought I could do, improve my interpersonal skills. It gave me some greater confidence. So I ultimately started my own business in 2000, which was an e-learning company, and one of our first clients was Dale Carnegie. We developed programs to support the Dale Carnegie courses throughout the world. I built that company and in 2005 ultimately sold it and started a new company with the people who bought it. That was a company called Asset Health, which is a health promotion business that really supported companies that were 1,000 to 80,000 employees putting in health promotion programs for them. And I served as the president of that company until I joined Dale Carnegie in August.
So what was it that brought you to the organization? You know, it's been around a long time, 103 years. Certainly has name recognition, brand recognition across the globe. You know, what brought you here at this critical time as an organization is moving forward and changing?
So first of all, I've got to tell you, I would not have left and moved my family and done all that I did really for just any company. Dale Carnegie is, as you said, Dave, I mean, it's an iconic company. And more than that, it's a company that truly transforms people and businesses and communities. It's powerful. And so, you know, for me to look at the opportunity to lead and to be a part of this amazing company and a company that played such an important role in my life and continues to do so was just a great opportunity.
So, you know, one of the things that certainly you know and then I hear about is the fact that, you know, today digital has become a big part of training and development across the globe. And I know that we're certainly seeing a lot more emphasis on the digitizing of even the Dale Carnegie programs. Could you talk to the audience a little bit about how you see that being so relevant to the future going forward, but also how important it is to maintain that one-on-one, that in-class, you know, participation? As there's no substitute for that.
Sure. Actually, and this is a topic I know quite a bit about since I was in the e-learning business, and ultimately the second company I started, it also had mobile and online technology and a portal platform and that type of thing. So I've got a pretty good sense about technology and e-learning and how people communicate using digital platforms and so forth. And so you're absolutely right, Dave. The reality is that we will see, you know, a more ubiquitous combination of technology as it applies to learning and programs and so forth. And at the same time, and the thing that really is amazing to me about Dale Carnegie is that there's something that does happen in a classroom-based experience where someone is in a course and they stand up and they give a 2 or 3 minute talk. And the whole experience of being in that environment, safe environment, really changes people. So part of my vision is that there are some things, and I'm not aware of any way, really, to replicate what we do in a Dale Carnegie course or to substitute it simply in a digital platform. However, I think there are opportunities to take and to combine and to integrate technology into the approach that we have, courses that have been here for over 100 years, and to make them even more powerful and even more impactful, although what we have today is amazingly impactful. Not a day goes by where someone doesn't tell me how Dale Carnegie, the book or the course, has changed their lives and so forth. So what I really see is kind of this confluence of technology and a 100-year-old proven in-class methodology that will be even more powerful than it is today.
It's kind of a blended approach, right? A combination between technology and one-on-one combinations that really bring people together. You know, one of the things that I know we've spoken about and others certainly have spoken about is the millennial generation and even Generation Z that's coming through now and just starting in the workplace. And I'm a big believer, as I know you are, that this generation even needs this more than ever, yet they're not as recognized with the name. How are you looking to make that as part of a big focus for Dale Carnegie in the next few years?
Yeah, so I think you're really touching on two things, Dave, right? One is the relevance of what we do for the millennial generation, and then the second is how do we work on the brand and communicating what we do in a way that helps people see it. So as it relates to the first part, I mean, I can say firsthand, I've seen you know, the amazing impact that our course has had on millennials and younger. I have six children, but my two oldest ones have gone through a Dale Carnegie course. They're now 17 and 16. And I can see my daughter, who's 17, is just still on fire. She's not only taken a Dale Carnegie course, she's talked to all of her friends about it and grew up in a graduate assistant and so forth. And when I go to a class where millennials have taken this course, they will talk about how much impact it had on them, how it's opened up this confidence that they've had, how it's enabled them to do things that they didn't think they could do. And so a big part of what we know is that what we do is highly relevant to millennials today, as it is to all people, because part of what Dale Carnegie discovered when he wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People is timeless insights and principles about human interaction and how we're wired. So the first part of this is completely relevant, really, to all people. The second part, then, is how do we really communicate that? And I really think that part of it is telling our story better in a more effective way, in a visual way, in a way that relates. You know, we've got to go to people where they are. So that means, you know, communicating via different platforms and media and so forth. And also, you know, not being afraid to go out and really tell the story of Dale Carnegie and how we change people and businesses.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I think is so important, and you've spoken this before, is getting that message out, right? That story out, because
right.
Because it hasn't necessarily been as vocal as it had been over the last 10, 20 years, right? I mean, it's just a little quieter now. However, the relevance is almost, if you talk to most parents, they'll say, you know, all their kids are doing is on the cell phone or on their iPad, or that, you know, they're not really talking to one another. And businesses, as we are hearing day in and day out, I know I am, I'm sure you are as well, are very concerned about inter-office communication and the ability to sell to one another, the ability to have a conversation properly on an email, in a phone conversation, or just on a one-on-one, how to you know, prepare yourself for those type of meetings or those conversations. Talk to me a little bit about how you see, you know, how that is so relevant today, or you're seeing what you're seeing in the workplace today as well.
So first of all, what you've said is dead on. It's absolutely true. I mean, the way that the millennial generation has been raised, they've been raised with technology, so interaction has been different than it was with our generation, for example. So we need to be sensitive to that. And one is recognizing what the issues are. You know, how do we help, number one, reach people where they are, and number two, help them see that there are opportunities for growth. One thing about the millennial generation that all studies seem to point to, and I know by my experience, is that the millennial generation values training. They want to be better. They're trying to improve. And by the way, those are some of the same traits that the generation that Dale Carnegie trained were. You had a whole generation of people who were trying to advance in their career and trying to be better and so forth. So the millennial generation is hungry for a training that will be impactful and that will help them in their careers. They're also looking for something in their lives that will give them greater meaning. They're looking for work where they can have an impact and make a difference. And so Dale Carnegie really is a solution to both of those things. Number one, helping with interpersonal skills, helping with something that lets people have deeper relationships, more meaningful relationships, and to be more impactful in their work and their lives. So, you know, really, I think a lot of this has to do with how we market, how we tell our story, being able to go where millennials are. I do know that certainly generations of people are looking at the millennials and saying this is a little bit different generation. So there's definitely a desire, I think, by everyone to help provide tools and solutions to help the millennials be as impactful as they possibly can be.
You know, to your point, this generation is probably one of the most tech savvy ever, right? That have
right.
come across the platform ever. And the mentoring between the baby boomers and the millennials is actually a very strong bond because they, you know, baby boomers really wish they had that technology savvy. However, they have the, what we would call the knowledge, right? The experience. You know, they've lived through the challenges and tribulations. And then on the flip side, you have the millennial generation, which is incredibly tech savvy, but doesn't yet have that judgment yet to mm-hmm. really understand and move forward within that judgment and understand what it is to make mistakes and live through them and go through challenging times and make that area and make it better, right, in terms of that. You know,
that's true.
There are a lot of competitors in the marketplace. There are a lot of other training organizations. You know, as we wrap up this segment, can you kind of share with us, the audience here, what you think is the big differentiator for Dale Carnegie Training?
One thing I'd say is, especially with the emergence of technology, everyone's a thought leader. Everyone's got a book. Everyone's got a new idea. Dale Carnegie has, How to Win Friends and Influence People, has been a bestseller for 80 years. We've trained 8 million people in Dale Carnegie, and some of the most respected leaders in the world, people like Warren Buffett, will say that Dale Carnegie was a game changer for them. I haven't heard anyone talk about other training programs in the same way, and clearly Dale Carnegie has proven the test of time with what we do, you know, versus, you know, other things that may or may not have that kind of eternal substance, so to speak.
You're listening to Joe Hart. He is the president and CEO of Dale Carnegie & Associates in New York City. And we will be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Join the Northeast Human Resource Association at their annual conference from September 28th through 30th in Falmouth, Massachusetts. See why the NERA conference is sure to be 2.5 days of HR education you won't want to miss. With awesome keynotes, you'll be sure to leave Falmouth with new resources and key knowledge to support you in your career and earn up to 15.5 SHRM and HRCI credits. Register now at nehra.com or by calling 781-235-2900. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Joe Hart. He is the president and CEO of Dale Carnegie & Associates. Dale Carnegie, of course, one of the largest training organizations across the United States and across the globe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
You know, last segment we talked a little bit about Dale Carnegie itself and what brought you as the new president and CEO to Dale Carnegie & Associates. And you talked a little bit about why it's still relevant today, even though it's 103 years old, and how it's still a game changer for millennials that are out there. You mentioned to me during the break about an organization that you went to last month, and I think it would be great for you to share that story as an idea as how this type of program works.
Sure. So I had an opportunity to give a Dale Carnegie Leadership Award to a company called Indeed in Stamford, Connecticut. And Indeed is one of the fastest growing tech companies out there. They are a job search site. And so really, if you're looking for a new job, you might start at Indeed. They've seen amazing, amazing growth over the last 10 years. They have grown, I mean, just even recently, from 500 to now 2,500. They'll be at 8,000 people by the end of next year. And, you know, I had a chance to meet with the senior vice president of sales, and Dale Carnegie has been really an important part of Indeed's growth. They have, I think, virtually every person in the company has taken Dale Carnegie training. When I gave that award, Dave, and I looked across the room, this is in Stamford, Connecticut, probably had about 300 people there, and then they had live broadcast to offices throughout the world. Most of the people I was looking at were millennials. I mean, they were younger people. And as I talked to them, they thanked me. They thanked me for having Dale Carnegie be a part of the reorganization, they talked about the impact, and a lot of what we do in that organization might be sales-related, as well as human relations and interpersonal development and so forth. So what Dale Carnegie has done for a company like Indeed and for others is to really create a platform where people are able to be their best, where it unlocks this greatness in them, they interact in a more effective way, they've got lower retention and so forth. So it's really, I think, been a critical part of that organization. And it was just great, you know, Dave, to your point earlier, just to see the millennial generation, you know, this younger generation, right? I mean, we connect with them as much as other generations.
Yeah, you know, that's a great organization and certainly a growing organization. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, if you could just mention in terms of even smaller companies, you know, one of the things we deal with a lot here in the Northeast is family-owned businesses, right? So there are businesses where, you know, generation after generation, that next generation is coming up. And there's a lot of shift happening across the country with retiring baby boomers, and you're seeing that next generation come up. You know, how about give us a little example of how this type of development can be really so important for that, you know, that next generational family member that's coming up through the organization?
It's funny you asked that. I was actually with a company recently in Tampa. This is a 300-employee company in the sign business, and it's a family business. It's a business that was started by a man and his wife and passed on to the sons, and then it will ultimately be passed on to their kids. But I was talking to the president of the company, and he was telling me how he went on a sales call with his dad very early in his career. They went out on a sales call, and he, after the meeting, was talking to his dad, and he thought he absolutely had just killed it. And his dad said, "Son, you talked the whole time. You didn't listen at all. You know, you need to take a Dale Carnegie course." And so he ultimately took a Dale Carnegie sales course, and ultimately I think just about everyone in that company has taken a Dale Carnegie course over the years. But the point is, you know, when you've got one generation, and you spoke about this earlier, that has wisdom. If the baby boomers have knowledge and experience and wisdom, and other generations do, and how do we pass that on? And part of that is through, and we're doing it directly, through interpersonal exchange. And do we listen? Do we communicate well? Are we critical or are we empathetic? I mean, so a lot of just the successful transitioning of businesses involves how people are interacting with each other, and that's really an area where we excel.
So, you know, one of the things that people may not know is the wide range of development that Dale Carnegie provides, not only in sales training and certainly in personal development. Can you kind of give an overview of where you see, you know, as the big nuggets for organizations that think about, hey, you know, how do I bring them in? What is it that I should really think about before talking to somebody about Dale Carnegie? Where do you see those big nuggets being?
One big nugget is clearly around employee engagement. And as I lead my own company, lead Dale Carnegie, I look at people and I try to assess, is this person engaged? How do I connect with this person? How do I work with the leader and ultimately inspire that leader to inform that leader so that they can most effectively lead their teams? So when we talk about truly engaging someone at any level of the organization, when we talk about leadership and cultivating leaders, and we think about someone who maybe has been very effective in one role and now they're going to another role, that kind of leadership transition, you know, really that whole area that goes to development of leaders, that goes to how do we get people engaged. Many times companies will have turnover, significant turnover, and that can choke and kill a business. And so we ask, what are the underlying causes around that? And you know, a lot of that has to do with the supervisor, with interpersonal relationships, with how people are invested in or not invested in, how they're trained, how they are given performance reviews and things like that. So I'm not sure if that completely answers your question, Dave. I do think that really this, you know, one huge bucket is around the development of people. It's around the development of teams, the engagement of teams, and so forth. And another big bucket is around presentation skills. And all of us, all the time, are presenting and selling. I mean, this is really an area where Dale Carnegie started, and it is the gold standard around how do you really help someone convey their ideas more effectively? How do you put someone in front of a stage 1,000 people or in a meeting of 10 people and really help communicate in a way that is powerful and impactful and so forth. So those are a few areas I could certainly go on. I'll just stop and
No, that's fine. I think you're right. I think, you know, one of the things that anybody looks at when they're saying training is it worth the investment? Right? That's a question that always comes up when you're especially talking to C-suite professionals, CFOs, anybody who's looking at the bottom line. And there's always a cost to doing development and always a cost to doing training. And I've always believed that if you're going to do it right. Do the gold standard. Don't just settle because you sometimes get what you're, you know, you're sowing in terms of that. So when you're thinking about, as we talk about the gold standard, the ROI, companies want to know that there's going to be an ROI to whatever their investment is, or as I like to say, ROP, return on people. You know, what is it that they can see? And soft skills are sometimes hard to measure. Right there. Sometimes they're hard to measure. Do you have any feedback that you can provide to leaders listening today, HR professionals, C-suite professionals, as how people should measure that type of ROI?
Absolutely. So this whole issue of measurement is critical, particularly to the HR leader, because the HR leader is constantly under pressure around budget and demonstrating impact and so forth. And so many of our direct clients are in the HR arena, operations as well, where people have to say, look, you spent X dollars on this. What's the impact we have on it? Part of what we do, or certainly what we can do, we've got a range of different assessments that will look specifically at what a business situation is before we are engaged, what it looks like, you know, what are we doing, what's the impact after, and how's that measured, and how do you actually quantify some of that impact? And so on a case-by-case basis, we really will look at that, whether it's in a sales orientation, whether it's in a training that involves, you know, a specific group of people or an operational unit or whatever the case may be. Some of the things that we have been able to measure are just absolutely astounding. I was actually talking with one of our people in Nashville the other day. He was talking about this incredible ROI that they demonstrated for a company where it was, they put on a course that might have been $30,000 and were able to document and demonstrate specific savings of over $1 million in terms of the impact that they'd had at that training, because the training was created this ability to do something that the team wasn't able to do before, and in doing that, they were able to achieve ABC results. So, I mean, there are definitely ways to measure impact, and we can talk about that absolutely on a case-by-case basis.
You mentioned engagement, and you know, one of the researches that had come out in one of the programs that we put forth is talks about employee engagement. And I'm always fascinated by the fact that such a large group of people within an organization can be so disengaged. It's kind of disheartening at times when you really look at the numbers, right? And to the point at some points that they actually can sabotage the organization from within, having to do with negativity and gossip and all those other things that go on with that.
Yeah.
One of the things you're talking about is how to measure that, right? How to look at an organization and say, hey, you have a percentage of the organization, everyone does, which are not fully engaged, and how these programs can come in and really help either move them up or, in some cases, move them out, or at least determine to the point of where that is. And that's really helpful to HR.
No question. I mean, it absolutely is. And, you know, part of it is we don't always know what we have. Right, we see someone, we think they're engaged, do we really know, and yet we know that the cost of disengagement, as you correctly said, can be toxic. It can be a cancer in the organization. One of the things that we will do with our clients is to go in, and we can do an engagement assessment and really try to help understand where the organization is, what the points of impact can be, how do you change that, and so forth. So, but that's absolutely a critical area. You're absolutely right.
One of the things we have said that we were going to talk about on the show today is authenticity and being real.
Yes.
It's a program that you put together and presented. At high level, talk to us a little bit about the program, and then we'll certainly get into some of the details within it.
Sure. So one thing, you know, Dale Carnegie is a global organization. We operate in 90 countries. We have 197 operations. We train in 30 languages. So we are constantly conducting research, trying to learn and to assess and to understand what's changing and to be thought leaders. And so we conducted recently some global research. And we started originally in the United States and Brazil, and we ultimately expanded it to 11 other countries. And what we were trying to find, Dave, was what are the traits that leaders will demonstrate that will motivate someone to give their best or that will demotivate them and cause them to become disengaged? And how often do people see those things? So through this extensive research and also through our experience, we really came up with four specific qualities, which we call REAL, R-E-A-L. And R stands for reliable, and I can go to this if you'd like. E is for empathetic, A is for aspirational, and L is for learner. These four qualities, when a leader demonstrates them, can be game changers in terms of how they engage and lead organizations and truly have impact.
We're talking with Joe Hart, President of CEO, Dale Carnegie and Associates. Joe, so let's get into a little of this. Let's define reliable, because, you know, that seems like a simple definition. But what is it in regards to what a real leader needs to be?
So the first thing about reliable, Dave, is that it's first someone who is, we would say they're internally reliable and they're also externally reliable. So internally reliable means that they are authentic, that they are someone who they know who they are, they're comfortable in their own skin, they're not trying to be someone who they're not. They really kind of just emanate this confidence in people because people can see that they are who they are, and that kind of ties into the external reliability, so that they do what they say that they're going to do. They are dependable. And frankly, this trait, as we did our research, was one of the most important ones. Almost 60% of people that we surveyed said that they would not give their best for a leader who doesn't seem to believe in what they're doing. Almost 60% said they wouldn't give their best for a leader who doesn't provide truthful feedback. So this whole issue of you know, demonstrating this credibility, this authenticity, is really a cornerstone, Dave, for anything else that follows.
You know, I think reliability also from a standpoint of when a leader talks, they have to have absolute confidence that they're telling the truth all the time, right? That it's not just saying what they want to hear, but that they actually also want to listen from a reliable standpoint. They're willing to listen to people.
Absolutely. And listening is really a core part of this as well. I mean, that's a good, really, segue to being empathetic. I mean, empathetic really means, look, I don't have all the answers, and I really am others focused. I'm turning to you, Dave, or to other people, you know, to listen and to hear what your thoughts are, because I recognize that you may have something of value. You really may help me see something in a light that I didn't see, but also that I care about you as a person, right? I mean, I'm not just using you to accomplish something. It's, you know, I really have an investment in Dave. So, but listening is really a huge part of this. And again, back to the research, 60% of the people said they would not give their best for a leader who doesn't listen or who doesn't see things from their point of view. So going back even to what you said before, millennials will disengage much faster than other generations when it comes to listening. They want to feel as though they're being heard, that they have some impact, some meaning, and so forth. And so I do think that also goes to some of the turnover we see with the millennial generation, right? They feel like they're not being respected, they're not getting opportunities, they're not being listened to, etc. So that's definitely a huge part of this.
You know, I know that I was at the meeting in Arizona that was last year in the fall, and we were listening to a gentleman who had written a book called American Icon. And as a matter of fact, just so y'all know, I have about 50 pages left. I'm almost about 50 pages to go in that book. But the reality is I thought he was when you talk about somebody who was empathetic, right, and who really in this case was aspirational. We're going to talk about both. Talk a little bit about Alan in terms of how you perceive not only how he, the book and the man, and how that is so relevant to Dale Carnegie today.
So you're referring to American Icon, which is the book about Ford's turnaround, and it was written by Bryce Hoffman, who's a friend of mine. And Bryce chronicles how Ford Motor Company was on a date with destiny, or so it seemed, and that destiny was bankruptcy. They were as close to bankruptcy as any American company had been. And William Ford, Bill Ford, brought in Alan Mulally from Boeing to take over as the CEO in 2006. And Mulally had saved Boeing from disaster two times previously. And so, but he knew nothing about the auto industry, and certainly was, you know, he was ridiculed a little bit as a choice, but he completely saved the business. Part of what he did, he had earned the right, based on his experience at Boeing, to come in and to really say, look, here's what we're going to do. I'm in charge. You do this, et cetera. What Mulally did was a little bit different. Mulally was the kind of leader who really wanted to listen. I mean, he had a direction, and he had a vision, and at the same time, he's the kind of person who would, instead of eating in the executive dining room, where he could have and where all the other executives would eat, he would walk downstairs to the company cafeteria. He'd grab a tray. He'd stand in line. He'd get his food. He'd sit down at a table with the other employees, and he'd say, hi, my name's Alan. I'm the CEO. Do you mind if I join you? And he would just sit there and talk to people and listen to them around what they thought the company needed. He would frequently just get in. He got an email one time from an engineer who was talking about an issue that needed improvement in a vehicle, and Mulally called him up and said, come on up here. So they talked and put some plans out on the table and so forth, and you know, Mulally then said, you know, you're in charge. Go get this thing done. So he was someone who really valued the opinions of other people. And I do think it's important to say, though, too, Mulally was a tough leader. I mean, so being empathetic and listening and so forth doesn't necessarily mean that someone is soft. Mulally was tough. He made very, very tough decisions at Ford, and he did that in a way that really respected people. He tried to treat people the way that he would want to be treated and so forth. So a great example of someone who really lived the empathetic trait.
We're talking with Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie & Associates. We're talking about authenticity and being real in Dale Carnegie. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we'll be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie & Associates. He's out of New York City. We're talking about authenticity and being real, the foundation for inspirational and high-impact leadership. Joe, we've talked about the first two sections of what you call real, R-E-A-L, first being reliable, empathetic, aspirational, and learner. So we've talked about reliable. We've talked about empathetic. Let's talk about the A, aspirational.
Sure. The aspirational really is kind of neat here. It is the ability, clearly, to be able to set a vision for people and to do that in a way that inspires people. So what we know is that sometimes leaders can get caught up focusing on short-term targets, financial targets, and those are important. Those are critically important. What the data told us, though, was that people really want more from their leaders. They recognize the imperatives of the business, and at the same time, they want to have meaning in what it is that they do. So an aspirational leader is someone who can motivate people to overcome challenges, to inspire a vision for them, really to be their very best. And, you know, a couple of examples of this, actually one I like to think about, and it's a well-known one, right, is people talk about Steve Jobs, and I think about the iPhone, right? If Steve Jobs had gone to his team and said, hey, look, we're going to create a really cool phone, we're going to make a bunch of money, it's going to be great, that might have had one kind of impact. But what he always talked about what was something bigger. You know, we're going to change the world. We're going to change the way that people interact with information. We're going to put something in their hands that will change their lives and how they relate and communicate and connect with other people. And so you can imagine just being an employer, being in the receiving end of something like that, it's so much more inspirational. And to that point, we know, and again, you asked earlier, Dave, about the millennials, and since we're talking about that generation maybe more than some others, this is a core thing for millennials. They want to do something that will have meaning. They will want to work for someone that they really believe has a bigger vision and can inspire them to be their best. And we know that the data here around this was, 64% of the people will not give their best to someone who doesn't share clear goals, doesn't paint really a strong picture for them, etc. People really want to be a part of the solution. We say that in Dale Carnegie, people want to they'll support a world they help create, and part of that is this aspirational future that the leader sets.
I think that one of the things that's interesting about aspirational is, and sometimes I think that leaders get concerned that they're talking too high, right? They're talking pie in the sky. And so there is this balance between, do you put the realism, right, of what's happening, and it has to match that aspirational goal of, hey, we can get there so that the whole team comes together. You use another example of Microsoft. Can I talk about a little bit on that as well?
Sure. So Bill Gates, who we all know of, he originally said, look, Microsoft was founded with a vision of a computer on every desk and in every home. And they've never wavered from that vision. That's a Bill Gates saying. And so, again, when you set out kind of this, at that time, this big, hairy, audacious goal, this crazy thing that really sets a path for where they're going to go, where people are going to go. And at the same time, that doesn't mean that they weren't also focused on the short-term requirements of running the business. They were. So it's exactly as you said, Dave. It's a balance between, what we need to do as a business to remain profitable and effective and so forth, and at the same time having a larger purpose. And just one other example, I was with a company, I think I mentioned the sign company. This is a company that makes signs for business, fast-growing company in Florida. But a lot of what they do is safety. And so they talk about, you think about people talking about quality or speed to market or things like that, but they basically say, our goal is to help every worker get home at the end of the day. When our signs are in a facility, it makes that facility safe, and it increases the chance that people are going to get home to their families, and that's what we're about. So you can do this at different levels in different businesses. It's really just looking at why do we do what we do? Why do we care about that? That's aspirational.
We're talking with Joe Hart, president of Dale Carnegie. The last section is L, or learner. Talk about
that. So learners, we're really talking about active learners. These are people who are constantly trying to improve themselves. They say, look, I don't have all the answers. They seek other people's input. They learn from their experiences. They're not afraid to make mistakes. And the good, maybe a good example of this is Warren Buffett. It's because, he'll say that 80% of what he does in a given day is reading, learning, listening. Because doing that gives him better judgment. And not that all of us could spend 80% of our time necessarily doing those things, but the point is that someone as astute, someone as successful as Warren Buffett says, look, I've got to spend a vast majority of my time learning because I don't have all the answers. I mean, that's humbling to me to hear someone like him, who, by the way, he's one of the famous Dale Carnegie graduates, someone who said that the Dale Carnegie course that he took as a young man changed his ability to really be confident and to speak in front of other people. It was a game changer for him. So, but he's also someone who's not afraid to admit mistakes, and he will do that. If he's wrong, he'll say, look, I made a mistake, I'm wrong, and that's part of what being a learner is all about, too.
Well, that's part of what being a great leader is all about. I mean, really,
absolutely,
to be able to be out front and say, hey, look, this I made an error, and we're going to learn from it and move forward. I think that that's a big part of sometimes what leaders fail to do is to own it and to move on and to make it right.
Well, we see that exactly, Dave, in the research where, again, what we were trying to get to are huge demotivators for employees. And you were asking about engagement. We were talking about engagement earlier. If you want to have disengaged employees. If you want to disengage people, a good way to do that is to refuse to admit your own mistakes. Almost 70% of the people we surveyed said that they will not give their best for leaders who refuse to admit their own mistakes, who are not receptive to the ideas of others, who don't listen, etc. So, I mean, these are real issues that plague the workplace or that can drive a workplace to great performance.
You know, one of the things you're talking about a leader being real, is that you? I know the research talked about a large group, and I believe it's 72%, would give their best effort for a real leader over one who's even charismatic. That's interesting, because typically people say, oh, if they like you, they'll do a better job for you. But that's not necessarily true.
It's not necessarily true. And it was really a bit of a surprise to us as we looked at the data and we thought about it. And because we think about people who are charismatic, the people who walk into a room and light up a room and so forth. And that's a great quality, and we're not saying that that's a bad quality. What we're saying is that there has to be something more. People are demanding from their leaders substance. And so they want someone who is reliable, and that reliability goes to credibility and trustworthiness and the ability to build a relationship, to know where someone stands, that empathetic, that I'm important, they listen to me, that my supervisor cares about me, that they're aspirational, they paint a vision for me, that they listen and learn and so forth, they've made mistakes. That kind of a leader, you said, you're right, 72% of the people said, I would give my best efforts for that kind of a leader versus someone who's purely, you know, charismatic, or maybe they inspire me at this particular moment, but that's not, without more, you need more, and that's really the substance of real.
Sure, I mean, you talk about Steve Jobs and Apple. I mean, I think that if you read anything about him, he was a very tough person to work for, a very tough leader to work for, and not necessarily at times great to work for. However, his vision and his ability to come across with the other parts really drove that company forward.
It did, and it's interesting because, you know, Steve Jobs, who's such a phenomenal leader of our day, embodied some of the traits, but maybe not all of the traits of real. And we're not saying that someone can't be a great leader without all of these things. What we are saying is that if you bring all these things together, it really can be extremely effective. But, you know, I mean, Steve Jobs, you're right, was a very tough guy in many regards, and you know, I wonder, you know, maybe he could have been even better, but certainly he accomplished phenomenal things.
Oh, no question about it. You know, one of the things that we're always talking about with leaders that are out there is retention. And so I'm going to go to that now, because I think it's a big part of not only if you want to talk about engagement, but retention of employees. And, you know, I know Dale Carnegie is a way for employers to say, hey, we value you, you need to grow, and so this is a way to help you grow within the organization. What are some of the numbers, what are some of the statistics, if you have some, or some of the stories you could talk about, organizations that have really retained great talent because of using Dale Carnegie as a platform of training and development?
Yeah, so there was a company I met with just recently that talked about the retention that they had. This is a company that was, you know, quickly growing, and they were losing people. I think they had a turnover rate of, you know, call it 40-50%, and they ultimately started to implement Dale Carnegie on a system-wide basis. In fact, you were talking about ROI. Their retention rate now, or is 18%, or essentially, it's 82% retained and only 18% turnover. So, you know, part of what they did, and it started with leadership, demonstrating, you know, a vision and qualities and so forth, and working with the leaders, and at the same time then equipping people throughout the organization with this common platform or framework to be able to engage each other in a more effective way. So they've cut their turnover by a very significant amount.
What do you think, when you're thinking to yourself, okay, Dale Carnegie, what does it mean to you?
It's a very personal question, because for me, Dale Carnegie was a game changer in my life. When I took it, I was a young lawyer. I had maybe more confidence in myself in a little bit of an arrogant way. I don't think I was all that effective at interacting with people, or certainly not as effective as I wanted to be. And, you know, the vision I had for my future was certainly more limited. After I took the Dale Carnegie course, it really just opened up a whole world of possibilities. I mean, I'm a different person as a result of Dale Carnegie. So when you ask me what it means to me, I look at my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, who took the Dale Carnegie course when she, you know, was 15, and just the newfound confidence that she had. She was in a high school class, and just, you know, out of the blue, the teacher had said, "We're going to do an impromptu speech today. Everyone's going to come up and give an impromptu speech." She knew how to do that. She felt confident to do that. So Dale Carnegie, for me, for my kids, my wife has taken Dale Carnegie, has given us all skills that have enhanced our confidence, helped us interact with people more effectively. It's been an amazing, you know, blessing in our lives.
We're listening to Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie and Associates. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are talking with Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie and Associates down in New York City. Right? New York City. Did I say that
right?
That's it. That's all good.
Big Apple, baby.
Big Apple. That's right. You know, where are you in New York City? I think it's important for people to know that you're actually right downtown.
We're right in Midtown, off of 3rd Avenue and 48th. So it's right in the heart of things. It's a great place to be.
It is a great place to be. Been there, love the city, love it. So, you know, I think as we head into the last segment here, I'd like to ask you, you know, Dale Carnegie is a global brand. It is a great organization, and certainly I love being part of it. But where do you see the future of Dale Carnegie 2, 3, 5 years from now? Where's your vision of taking it as president and CEO over the next 5, 10 years?
First of all, I don't think Dale Carnegie's future could ever be brighter than where it is right now, and I say that not just because I'm here. I'm saying it because it's Dale Carnegie, because I look at the relevance of what we have and this phenomenal, you mentioned global, we've got a phenomenal global footprint of 197 franchise owners in 90 countries throughout the world. So we've got the ability to deliver for major companies or smaller companies throughout the world in native languages and so forth. So we've got a great footprint. We've got a transformational product. Where I see the future really is in the opportunity, number one, to start to integrate technology into some of the things that we're doing. We talk about really building better and stronger connection, long-term connection with our participants. So when they take a Dale Carnegie course in the end, they've got this connection with each other through social media, through a greater platform. I think about app integration and blended learning solutions in our courses. So I think there's a lot that we can do to make what we're doing even more amazing. I also think you will hear a lot more about Dale Carnegie. A big part of what we haven't done and what we need to do and what we will do is to really tell our story more effectively, because Dale Carnegie was, when he started, the global thought leader. He was you think about Thomas Edison or Henry Ford or Steve Jobs, these great innovators. Dale Carnegie was the innovator when it came to really understanding interpersonal skills. So you're going to see, really, I think, a resurgence from a brand standpoint of the Dale Carnegie name. You'll be hearing a lot more about Dale Carnegie, a lot more visibility, and I'm excited about it.
Well, you should be excited, and certainly, you know, you've only been there a little less than a year, right? You're not even
a full year
in place. And there's been a lot of change, a lot of focus, a lot of areas that you're seeing to improve. As you talk to companies and HR professionals out there, what can they see in terms of how that you can better serve them in terms of their organizations? And what is it that you're going to be able to focus the organization on to help serve them?
So the first thing I would say in saying how do we serve them is let's have a conversation. They should reach out to one of our franchise offices or offices wherever they are. And if they haven't talked to us recently, they'll say, wow, Dale Carnegie is doing some new and some innovative things that I really wasn't aware of. One example of that was we've built an industry-leading virtual instructor-led training program, a digital training program, so we can train people, you know, really remotely using the most current technology to do that. But also what you were asking about earlier was, ROI. Can you craft something for me? Could you even customize a program for my people based upon the specific needs that we have? So what you'll find is an adaptability, a measurability to measure impact, a very business-focused emphasis in terms of what we're doing, really to make the HR leaders' jobs easier by not only helping achieve results, but to be able to demonstrate those results as well.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you today and talking to you about Dale Carnegie. How can somebody reach you directly?
We have our website, which is dalecarnegie.com. If they want to reach me directly, one good way to do is Twitter. That's at Joseph K. Hart, J-O-S-E-P-H-K-H-A-R-T. So those are two good ways to do that.
And if you're talking to franchises across the country, anything you want to share with them?
Just that they are, you know, really inspirational to me. We've got some of the best people I've ever met in my life in our franchise network. These are people who are committed to their clients. They're committed to Dale Carnegie, to being one Carnegie, to working together and living together as one global organization. And I've just been so impressed and so grateful with what I've seen within our network.
Well, Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie & Associates, we've talked about the organization, we've talked about authenticity and being real and some of the research that's out there. You've talked about where we're going and where the organization is going, and I want to thank you for your leadership in this organization.
Thank you, Dave. Enjoyed being with you today.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerilDana.com.
This is Tawny Alvarez. Have you heard of GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, which prohibits employers from discriminating against employees or applicants based off genetic information and from requesting genetic information? Requesting information includes things such as conducting an internet search on an employee in a way that is likely to reveal genetic information to the employer. Genetic information includes information about the manifestation of a disease or disorder in the employee's family. Remember that employee who a supervisor friended on Facebook and learned through Facebook that the employee's mother had died of breast cancer? That is protected genetic information. It is important to understand the broad implications of GINA and what information is protected. Contact a member of Veril Dana's Labor and Employment Practice Group at verildana.com to further discuss.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by verildana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on wlobradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.